All right, hi folks. We're all having a very nice week here in London. We've heard a little bit about magnetic fields and BE stars. In fact, Rivi and Dietrich tried to give my talk for me this morning. Fortunately, I still have a little bit to talk about. 27 slides, in fact, so I'm going to get moving. So what I'm going to tell you about today are some results concerning the diagnosis of large-scale magnetic fields in BE stars from the MIMES project. And in particular, I'm going to talk about a new method for quantitatively characterizing those fields called the hybrid method. I'll begin with this very beautiful picture that is an illustration derived from one of Rich Townsend's rigidly rotating magnetosphere models. This gives us the basic picture we want to have in mind of what we know about magnetic fields in B-type stars. In particular, the magnetic fields are organized on large scales. You can think of them generally as dipoles. They're oriented obliquely to the rotation axis of the star, and as illustrated here in the beautiful glowing orange, they channel wind plasma and generate complex circumstellar structures around the star. And this was described a little bit in Stan's review on Monday. And so if we look at these things in time, we can see that as the star spins around, our view of the magnetic field, and hence the circumstellar geometry, is modulated according to rotation. In particular, these stars exhibit sometimes H-alpha emission, and that H-alpha emission is telling us about the magnetic field and the plasma distribution around the star. And so they're interesting in the context of this conference because from the basic definition of BE stars, that is, stars that demonstrate at some point in their evolution emission in H-alpha, they can be classified as BE stars and mistaken for BE stars. We're going to hear talks a little bit later this afternoon, I believe, by Matt Schultz and Chris Bard that are going to tell us a little bit more about these stars with circumstellar magnetospheres. So one of the interesting results from the MIMES survey was a large-scale survey of magnetic fields in 550 O and B type stars. What's illustrated here is a histogram in gray of the stars that were observed as a function of spectral type, and in red the stars that were detected. And the main takeaway from this is that the detection rate of magnetic fields as a function of spectral type is more or less constant, and it's equal to somewhat less than about 10%. So about one in every 13 or 14 stars that we observed hosted a magnetic field that was detectable at about the level of precision that was obtained for the survey. And so if we look more carefully at the known magnetic B stars, there are about 55 of these objects that were summarized by Petit et al. In 2013. We look at the distribution of surface magnetic field dipole strengths. We find that the typical dipole strength of a magnetic B-type star is several kilogauss. Okay, so this is about the strength of a sunspot, but distributed more or less uniformly across the surface of the star. There have been a variety of attempts to detect magnetic fields in BE stars in the past. One recent example is that by Niner et al., who attempted to follow up the apparent detection of a 500 gauss magnetic field in Omega Ori from 2003 using new data from the MIMES survey. In the end, no magnetic field was detected in this particular star, and they obtained an upper limit of about 80 gauss on the surface dipole field strength. So we're able to get actually very tight constraints on the possible magnetic fields that might exist at the surfaces of these stars. An exciting possibility was the discovery of a magnetic field in, at that time, the BE star Beta Cephei. This was a discovery that was obtained by Henricks et al. It was published in 2001, first by Donati and then more recently by Hype Henricks. You can see this beautiful sinusoidal variation of the longitudinal field of this star corresponding to a surface dipole of about 300 gauss in Beta Cep. Unfortunately, it was realized in 2006 that Beta Cep isn't in fact a BE star. It's the companion, the secondary star, about 3.5 magnitudes fainter, that's the BE star. So up until this point, we have no evidence of the existence of magnetic fields in any BE-type stars. As part of the MIMES survey of 450 B-type stars, one of our primary experiments was to test the possibility of the existence of large-scale fields in BE stars. And so this is a very typical chunk of a MIMES spectrum that was acquired in this particular case at the Canada-France-Hawaii telescope using the Espadon instrument. On the bottom, you can see the typical absorption spectrum. This is a B0 star. In natural light, in Stokes eye, and up above that you can see an expanded version of the circular polarization as a function of wavelength. So our typical observation is high-resolution spectropolarimetry. If you look very carefully in this case, you'll notice that associated with each of the lines there's a little wiggle, and this is the signature of a magnetic field due to the Zeeman effect. Now, you'll notice in this particular example that those wiggles are obvious to the eye, but they're still relatively low signal-to-noise ratio, and this is actually a pretty good detection in the case of MIMES data. So really what we wanted to do in the case of the MIMES survey was to enhance our signal-to-noise ratio, and we did that using a multi-line technique called least squares deconvolution. Essentially, we scaled each one of the line profiles and added them together so that we could combine the signal from each one of the lines and reduce the noise level. And so least squares deconvolution, or LSD, is this convolution process where we enhance our signal-to-noise ratio. This is the same star that we saw on the last slide. This is what we call the LSD profile. On the bottom is the Stokes I profile. This is the Stokes V profile, where we see a very clear detection of a magnetic field. This is a diagnostic null that tells us whether or not the instrument is operating correctly. And so you can see very clearly in this case that we've increased the signal-to-noise ratio of our detection by a factor of almost 10. This is very unusual. Only about 1 in 13 or 14 stars, as I mentioned, is a detection in the MIMES survey. This is much more typical. This is an O-type star for which we obtain a null result. In either case, we want to be able to determine whether or not a magnetic field is present, and we want to be able to characterize the intensity of that magnetic field. So we can do that in two ways. One is using the detection probability, which essentially measures the departure of the signature in Stokes V inside the line from what we would expect from pure noise. So it's basically a chi-squared test. And in order to do that, we basically only need to know where the line is situated. So we need to know where it begins, where it ends. If we actually want to characterize the intensity of the magnetic field, the longitudinal magnetic field, for example, we need a quantitative measure of the Stokes I profile as well. And so we actually need to know what the photospheric spectrum of the star looks like. So that brings us to the problem at hand, and that's that we need to deal with BE stars that are stars that have spectra that are contaminated by typically unpolarized light that comes from the disk. So we have the absorption line from a potentially magnetized BE star in the center, but we also have a spectrum that's dominated by emission lines like this. And so the question that we want to answer is, how do we go about obtaining quantitative magnetic characteristics for stars for which we really don't know the underlying spectrum? So this is the BE star Gamma Cass, I believe. This is the MIMES observation of Gamma Cass. You can see that the spectrum is just a horrendous mess. We have the circular polarization that originates in the photosphere of the star, but most of the information in the Stokes I spectrum actually comes from the disk. And so what we apply is something called the hybrid method, where we replace the Stokes I spectrum by a synthetic spectrum that is based on the photospheric parameters of the star in question. And so hybrid comes from the fact that we acquire LSD profiles, we perform LSD on the combination of the hybrid of the observed Stokes V spectrum and a noisy version of a synthetic Stokes I spectrum that corresponds to each star. So this is a method that we first applied to Herbig AE and BE stars back in 2013 with Evelyne Alicien. John Landstreet was involved in this study. And what I'm illustrating here are the observed Stokes I LSD profiles in red and the model Stokes I LSD profiles that are in black. And what you'll notice is that there's a huge difference for Herbig stars because these stars are also stars that exhibit spectra that are terribly contaminated by their circumstellar environment. And so just comparing the observed Stokes I and the synthetic Stokes I profile, it's really difficult to evaluate whether or not these are reasonable representations of the underlying spectrum. But what we were able to do for a small sample of Herbig AEBE stars that had minimal contamination was to compare the observed spectra and the synthetic spectra. We found in general that those line profiles agreed very well. And so we were able to carry out an evaluation of this method, and we were able to show that using the hybrid method results generally in magnetic diagnoses for stars with clean spectra that are quite typical of what you would obtain from the real observational data, while on the other hand, for stars that had significant contamination of their spectra, we're able to obtain a much more meaningful quantitative diagnosis of their magnetic fields. And so for the BE star sample, we have about 215 spectra. Originally, we started with about 100 BE stars. At the moment, we're only working with 85 because there are 15 of which we're not entirely sure whether they're classical BE stars at this point, so we're being relatively conservative. High signal-to-noise ratio, we derive the parameters necessary to compute the synthetic spectra using Vsin I, radial velocities, and effective temperatures, primarily derived from the BEST database. Here are some comparisons between The synthetic Stokes eye LSD profiles, the observed Stokes eye LSD profiles for BE stars that have spectra that are primarily photospheric, and you can see that in some cases they agree very well. In other cases, it appears that there's either some discrepancies in the equivalent width, either due to errors in the effective temperature or potentially contamination by the circumstellar disk. In other cases, there are obvious discrepancies, and those are clearly due to circumstellar contamination of the observed LSD profile. And so these are the cases in particular for which we're able to obtain a meaningful diagnosis of the magnetic field, whereas we wouldn't have been able to do so in the past. Okay, so the basic result of the analysis of the 215 spectra is that we obtain no evidence of magnetic field in any of the 85 stars. And that should be contrasted with the fact that we obtained 30 detections in the broader MIMES B star sample, so in the other 365 stars or so. In the sample of BE stars, if magnetic fields were present at the same rate as they are in the broader population, we would have expected between 4 and 7 detections. This is the distribution of longitudinal magnetic field error bars. This is the logarithm of the error bar, so 2 corresponds to 100 Gauss. Just to give you an idea of the data quality, our median error bar is 103 Gauss at the current state of analysis. So that's reasonably good. It's about 25% larger than we obtained for the broader B star sample. What's very interesting is that we obtain error bars smaller than 30 Gauss for about 30 stars. And even more interesting from my perspective, if we're interested in testing models of complex magnetic fields, for example, is that we have about 10 stars that have error bars that are smaller than 10 Gauss. Okay, and that's possible because some BE stars are actually viewed pole on and have nice sharp absorption lines. In order to obtain more information about the strength of the magnetic field at the stellar surface, we use a Bayesian inference method that was developed by Véronique Petit in order to model the Stokes V-line profile across the LSD profile of each star. We perform the same analysis on the diagnostic null in order to have a comparison with a zero-field sample. And the basic result of this procedure is a distribution of probability distributions that are independent of the geometry of the magnetic field. This is obviously very complex, but the most important takeaway here is that we get the probability distribution function for the surface dipole magnetic field strength. And so that provides us with the capability of inferring a strict upper limit on the strength of any dipole magnetic field that may exist in the photosphere of the star. We do this for every star in the sample, and then we can construct probabilistic distributions that tell us about the magnetic field properties of the population. And so that's what's shown here. This looks a little bit complicated, but I'll lead you through it. These histograms here that are kind of choppy, these are the 68%, 95%, 99%, and 99.9% histograms of the confidence intervals of the probability distribution functions for all of the stars. This particular function here, the smooth function, is a probabilistic histogram. It's the combination of the PDFs for all of the stars summed in each bin and brought together. And so the way you can interpret these results here I'm going to take the 50% the 50% level, so this will be like the median result for the sample. We can apply a hard upper limit of about 500 Gauss, corresponding to the 2 sigma, the 95% confidence interval, for the magnetic fields at the surfaces of 50% of the stars in the sample. So what that means is that if we were to select the 50 stars for which we have the best magnetic constraints in the BE star sample, none of them would have a magnetic field stronger than 500 Gauss. But somewhat more interesting is to take what I refer to as a soft upper limit that corresponds to the median of the probabilistic histogram. So the probabilistic histogram is a way of characterizing what the typical strength of magnetic fields would be in the sample if they had a distribution of magnetic fields corresponding to the dipole PDFs. And in that particular case, we obtain a 50% result of 70 Gauss. So my takeaway from these particular results that correspond to about a fifth of the sample of BE stars, we didn't have quite enough time to finish the analysis I got this figure 45 minutes ago. The upper limit that we obtain for 50% of the sample is somewhere between about 100 Gauss and 500 Gauss. And we can strictly rule out fields stronger than 500 Gauss in 50% of the sample. Okay? So my basic takeaway from this is that BE stars and B stars with strong organized magnetic fields are mutually exclusive samples. Okay? So we don't find B stars with strong magnetic fields amongst the BE stars. And one way of illustrating that is looking at the distributions of V sine I's of the two samples. So in blue is the distribution of V sine I for our BE star sample. And in red is the distribution of V sine I's for the 55 known magnetic B-type stars that were published in Petit et al. You can see that they're very different. One obvious reason for that difference in V sine I distribution is because magnetic braking influences the rotation rates of the magnetic stars and spins them down as a function of time. But what's very interesting to note is that there are still a few magnetic B stars, typically cooler magnetic B stars that have weak winds and therefore very long magnetic braking timescales, that have V sine I's that are quite comparable to the V sine I's of BE stars. And that's very interesting. From my perspective, I think magnetic fields provide a natural way of bleeding the population of BE stars of stars that have magnetic fields. Simply due to magnetic braking, they spin down over time, and then they no longer have the fundamental characteristic that's required for a star to be a BE star, that is rapid rotation. Maybe one way to find magnetic BE stars would be to look at really young samples of stars, because in that case they would have been less influenced by magnetic braking over time. Except that I suspect that the two stars that we saw there with V sine I's of order 300 kilometers per second are a likely indication that when stars are rotating really rapidly and they have magnetic fields, they generate circumstellar structures, as Stan has pointed out, that are different from the Keplerian disks that we see in the case of BE stars. In particular, in those cases, even though we see H-alpha emission, that H-alpha emission results from a magnetosphere with a very different dynamical distribution than a BE star. So just wrapping up, we heard a little bit in Rivian Dietrich's talk about the possibility of having complex magnetic fields. This possibility was explored from a numerical perspective by Kochakov and Sudnik in the last couple of years. They evaluated magnetic signatures that were produced by random distributions of bipolar spots. That's what's illustrated in each one of these figures. From my look at the BE star data that we have in hand, in the case of moderately rapidly rotating, moderate V sine I BE stars, say 50 kilometers per second V sine I, we're able to constrain the existence of spots that are about 5 degrees in diameter and have strengths that are of order the equipartition field strength in the photosphere, so 300 or 400 Gauss. At the same time, it's not very useful to use ad hoc models like this to try and constrain those distributions. We really need physically motivated models that make predictions not only about the existence of magnetic spots, but what the structure and strength of those spots is going to be. And one example that I can give is the study by Matt Schultz of the capability of magnetic spots to produce the loops of material that are inferred to exist around Alpha Cygni variables. And so those physically motivated models are really something that we need to see in the coming years. The last result I'm going to show you is the beautiful H-alpha profile of Omicron Aquarii. Up here is 25 times the Stokes V spectrum, and what I'm trying to illustrate here is that we have the capability with MIMES data to perform relatively sensitive diagnoses of the existence of magnetic fields in the circumstellar disks of BE stars, not only in their photospheres. And in this particular case, as you can see, the Stokes V spectrum is extremely flat. At the same time, as far as I'm aware, there are no quantitative model predictions that are available for the existence of magnetic fields in BE disks, and so it would be very interesting to see those. There are a few limitations of our analysis. This really is work in progress, and we're going to see it develop over the next 3 to 6 months. And before Carol starts to get antsy, I'm going to wrap up. So the basic conclusion is that strong organized magnetic fields are not generally present at the surfaces of BE stars, with a strict upper limit of about 500 Gauss and a population-sensitive upper limit of perhaps 100 Gauss. And so as a consequence, it seems that the population of B stars with strong magnetic fields and BE stars are mutually exclusive, either due to evolutionary scenarios or perhaps due to formative scenarios. And the potential exists to obtain quantitative constraints both on the strength of complex magnetic fields at the surfaces of BE stars as well as magnetic fields in their circumstellar disks. Thank you for your attention.
Thanks for your very nice talk, Greg. We have time for a few questions. We have one from Atsu.
If the turbulent magnetic field is present in B disks, is there a way to detect it? If we assume that the magnetic pressure is saturated at the 10% of the gas pressure, then the magnetic pressure is very strongest in the innermost part of the disk, and it decreases rapidly outward. In such a case, is there a way to detect it?
The detectability of the field is fundamentally a function of the spatial scale of the field structures. So the spatial rate at which it changes sign and its typical intensity. And so the basic way to answer that question would be to predict a spatial power spectrum of the field and its strength, and then to synthesize line profiles according to that field.
Any other questions? Stan.
I think what's so interesting about this result is it not only confirms the prejudice that you can't have a Keplerian disk existing with a large-scale surface field, but it also suggests that since you do have counterexamples of rapidly rotating magnetic BP stars, that maybe the magnet, I would have thought maybe one of the reasons why BE stars are rapidly rotating is that they were the subpopulation of massive stars that didn't have any magnetic field, so they didn't have any of this disk walking effect, and they got very close to critical rotation. But we see a counterexample where we have those two stars, the rapid rotating B star, where they're still rotating very close to critical, but they obviously have it. And then also, I don't know if you recall, you mentioned that there's also these magnetic Herbig stars.
Correct.
Magnetic fields seem to appear in the Herbig stars in roughly the same proportion. So it doesn't seem to be the case that magnetic field is playing a big role in the origin of, or the lack of, spin down in the B star. There's something else. It's not just, in other words, it's not just a dynamical effect of not being compatible with the BE disk. The BE stars can also be rotating, but why they're rapidly rotating seems to be independent of the magnetic field property.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
Okay. Thanks for your comments. Okay, so now I'll ask, let's thank Greg again.